the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
I'm Thierry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
We're excited to be coming to you today. We have a big, big show, as we do every week. We're here Saturdays and Sundays, sometimes three times on a weekend, depending on the sports schedule.
Yep.
Move around a bit. Katie O, what's been up with your weekend?
Oh, a lot. A lot of eating. I'm actually still full from dinner last night, so amping up with some coffee.
I am, too. I didn't finish eating until about 11:30 last night.
Ooh.
Then I had to work out this morning. That's a bad combo.
That's what working out's for, though.
So on our show today, we're making a meal out of what's in your fridge. We're going to learn about barrel-aged beers with Dan Ashley of the Elliott Bay Brewery. We're going to share our favorite taste. And actually, mine was last night at dinner. I had a delicious dinner in Ballard. And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. Because that's what we do here. We like to gang up on Katie and kick her butt.
That's true. My butt has been getting kicked lately.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it a little bit less, but I appreciate the competition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm chef owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants. I'm also chef owner of this Hot Stove Society, where we do our show every week on Tuesday mornings. If you want to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com. And for $15, you too can have a ticket. Have a hot breakfast sandwich from the Dahlia Bakery on that delicious English muffin.
And it's worth every penny of it.
There you go. And a hot cup of coffee. And the company of Janet, the local food empresario who got walloped last week in the quiz.
Dang.
That was it was a throwdown wallop.
Feels very insulting.
I had to have a chat with your husband at the gym and just was saying. Ordinary to extraordinary.
Yes, this is where you take some ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary. Sometimes we even use ingredients, and in this particular case, we are. Sarah, I'm assuming, wants to know, Sarah, our production assistant, wants to know, how do you make
a birthday cake?
A birthday cake! Yes.
How do you make a birthday cake?
She tried to somehow sneak her way out of telling us that it was her birthday. Mm-hmm. But yes, how would you make the most perfect birthday cake for Sarah? And we also have an audience member whose name is
Michelle,
who also is having a birthday today too.
Wow, it's big birthday day.
Hmm.
How would I make it? I go to the store. I go to Ballard Market and I buy the Duncan Hines sprinkle cake mix, and then you add, I think, like a cup of
really
neutral oil, and. No, I wouldn't do that.
So I would go to Julia Child's cookbook or online and pick up a very simple cake to make, a pound cake, for example, which is a very easy to make cake. It's 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound. And you have leftovers for all your friends. But anyway, it's an easy cake to make, and you bake that and you let it cool off, and then you can slice it. You can do all you want with that, with just a little bit of whipped cream and some fresh strawberries, because it's the end of summer and we have the second harvest of the strawberry right now. Macerate those strawberries in a little bit of sugar and maybe some julienne mint for about 2-3 hours on your counter and keep tossing them around. Put that over your whipped cream and you'll have a wonderful birthday cake.
Wonderful.
All good and homemade.
And with how many candles in it? 24 candles.
24 candles.
Mm. Mm. There's no looking back now. You're almost a quarter century. Frankly, there's a sale on cemetery plots at the Greenwood Cemetery.
Tom knows this. He also
had
this. A birthday.
Yeah, I just had a birthday, so I was out shopping, and it is there's discounts happening.
Might be a bit premature for you, Sarah. Just saying.
Never know.
Tom likes to
knock
be prepared.
On wood.
Yes,
never
that's
know.
Right.
If anything happened to her,
I just knocked on wood. It can't happen.
All right. Well, I guess enjoy that pound cake, huh, Sarah? Yeah. There you go. Okay. Our next dish is the Monte Cristo. It's National Monte Cristo Day on the 17th. I had to look this one up because I personally have never had one, though I know it is a very beloved and famous sandwich.
What did you discover by looking it up?
That it's like a different version of the Croque Madame, basically.
Yeah, just sweet.
Right? Just
sweet,
a little bit
right? There's
sweet.
Powdered sugar all over the place.
A little powdered sugar. I think sometimes a little jam. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Yeah.
I hate them.
You hate them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things about doing this show over the years is I've learned to let my feelings out.
Really? You think it took... Mm-hmm. You took
most of the time...
Cottage cheese, Monte Cristo. One of the... One of the reasons I hate them is that I used to have to make them at Boondock Sundeckers and Green Thumbs, which was a saute house up on Broadway on Capitol Hill in 1977. I was on the line. My shift started at 10 p.m. and went till 6 a.m. So we went all the way through what we called bar wars. And so at 2 o'clock, right, the bars close and everyone's
shows up
high or drunk or right. or something, making, you know, finding lovers.
Maybe both.
But they come and sit at the counter at the bar at Boondocks.
Uh-huh.
And that was the most popular thing ordered was the Monte Cristo.
And why do you think that is? For something
bad bar food, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. You just want to have something to soak up everything you've overdid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's a good sandwich to do it with. I mean, you know, it's salt. It's not even salted. It's just sweet. I mean,
well, you take the whole sandwich, you dip it in an egg batter, and then you pan fry it.
Right.
Like, you have to be a little drunk to even think that would be good.
I think that's the only time you probably eat a Monte Cristo in the middle of the night after a few yes. drinks. Okay. Moving on to the next one, fried rice. National Fried Rice Day is on the
20th. I love fried rice.
Me too. Talk about something I think
talking about something
all
fried.
agree on. That's another good late night.
I love to start with brown rice or that. There's that mix of grains out there now. There's 8 or 10 different rice granules in the same mix.
Oh, yeah.
It just feels good and healthy for you. I don't know if it is or not, but I love that. And then I like doing things, you know, I use the barbecue window in Chinatown. So I'll put little pieces of duck or barbecue pork or side pork with the crispy pig skin on it or, you know, the lap chong, the little sweet Chinese sausage works beautifully with
that. Do you start with the veggies or do you start directly with the rice?
For me, you have to do two pans to me because I like the rice browned a bit. But if you put the veggies in and then try to brown the rice, you'll overcook the veggies.
Right.
So I do my veggies in one wok and I do my rice in another. And then right when it's time, I put them together and finish.
I would think that would be the best technique.
Yeah, but that's not how they do it in Chinatown.
Chinatown they get 1,200,000.
Yeah, and they're using a little different kind of vegetable
12,
and they're not putting the brown on it. You know, that's a personal preference.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's not typically the way you get it out there in the world.
So. You like it paella brown.
I do. I like that little caramelized rice. Because rice has natural sugars in it that brown up beautifully and get a little crunchy.
Yeah.
Just which like paella does on the bottom of the pan.
Which is also why rice will burn very easily.
But you can overdo it. I had one my wife made a couple of weeks ago, and she loves it super brown, but she took it too far, right?
Oh.
And you dehydrate the kernels of rice enough that it gets too crunchy and sticks in your teeth.
Like little gristly bits.
Mm-hmm. Upcoming... Dave Forsyth from the Four Feathers Wine Estate is here to talk about this year's harvest and how the smoke's affecting it. Smoky wine on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. Very lively audience. They obviously are just desperate for their sandwich this morning. Hungry and active. And
this is the deal. If you sign up for the show, you keep applauding until you get the sandwich.
Yeah. That's true. A little singing for the supper.
I know. Then you have to beg them to applaud after that because they know that there's nothing else coming.
Right.
Dave Forsyth is here. He's from the Four Feathers Wine Estates. And there's a lot of questions out there, Dave, about smoke. Because it's been such a smoky summer. I know at our farm in Prosser, we've had a lot of smoke. All the farmers themselves are wearing scarves around their face. And, of course, it's cleared up now, which is a beautiful thing. But are we going to have smoked wine for our next vintage?
Well, we did have a lot of smoke this summer. It was worse than last summer, which was a bad year. But we're not going to have smoky wines.
Good.
In order to get... What's going on with the smoky wines, and you can get a smoke taint to the wines, and the grapes will actually absorb some of the smoke compounds, guaiacol, onto the grapes, and once those get taken into the winery, they're released back into the juice and made into the wines. Mm-hmm. And the wines are not particularly pleasant. It might taste like an ashtray.
Mm-hmm.
Wine and drank out of an
Would
ashtray.
Would it get that strong?
It can get that strong.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The good news is in order to get that much smoke taint onto a grape, that fire needs to be right next to the vineyard. So if you have a wildfire that comes right up next to your vineyard, you might expect to get some smoke taint.
I would also imagine that the closer to harvest is the bigger the issue.
It is. It's a critical point in time. Once that grape hits veraison, when it starts to soften or color up, from that point on, it will absorb those smoke compounds.
All right. Well, tell us about Four Feathers Wine Estates and this year's harvest? Because it's happening right now, right?
It has. Harvest started last week. Mm-hmm. It's an early year. If we look at the heat units, we're about 10% ahead of normal this year.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because with all the smoke, I've been hearing that it's actually cooled off the area a little bit because it doesn't let the sun come through as much.
That's exactly what happens. That smoke kind of saved us. We had a real hot spell in August. We were going to have record temperatures mm-hmm. in eastern mm-hmm. Washington, but that smoke was there, and it took about 8 to 10 degrees off. So that saved us from getting some serious sunburn on the wine grapes. So it worked out for us in that case. But we did have an early start to our growing season, very warm early on, then it cooled off, and it's been pretty moderate all summer long. So it's been actually a very good growing season to date. But we are starting about 2 weeks early. We've brought in the early varieties. Harvest just isn't this chaos that we think of it. You typically, it takes 8 to 10 weeks to bring the grapes in, but Mother Nature and an infinite complexity and balance allows us to bring in some early ripening grapes first. Mm-hmm. Those varieties are Pinot Gris and Sauvignon Blanc. We tend to pick those grapes a little bit underripe. When we say underripe, let's think about picking a peach when it's just going from green to ripe mm-hmm. rather than fully ripe. So we do that because we want to make those wines stylistically a little bit brighter fruit, higher acidity. So we'll bring those grapes in a little bit earlier. They ripen earlier. They get the flavors and the sugars earlier than other varieties such as Cabernet Sauvignon. So we have started to bring in some of those grapes, the Pinot Gris and Sauvignon Blancs. And I've got a couple wines here, a wine here to taste. This is a Pinot Gris juice that we have. It is about 19 bricks now, so we've inoculated the juice, so it's starting to ferment. Mm-hmm. It's probably about a percent and a half alcohol now, mm-hmm. but you get a nice grapefruit character, maybe a little peach in there and mm-hmm. some mango.
And it looks like actually grapefruit juice at the moment.
Yeah, or apple cider. Or mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a darker, and it's not filtered yet, so it's a little cloudy, and yeah.
It is. That cloudiness is due to the suspended yeast that are in there. The juice mm-hmm. was actually quite clear once we racked it off after pressing it off. We've added the yeast. The yeast brings the cloudiness to it, and it's actively fermenting now. And it'll take about 2 to 3 weeks to ferment. We'll ferment it in large stainless steel tanks. We control the temperature because the yeast, as it consumes the sugar, produces alcohol. Mm-hmm. It also produces a lot of heat as well.
Right.
So we have to cool the tanks to keep that fermentation rate down. But it'll take about...
And what does it matter to you that it goes fast or slow?
Well, at lower temperatures, you get more esters produced from the yeast, so you get more fruity compounds. Mm-hmm. And at the higher temperatures, it will blow a lot of those nice aromas out right out the top mm-hmm. of the tank. So they become volatile and come out the top
and
of the tank.
And also, it's probably,
so we want to preserve them.
If it's too hot, it's very hard to control as well.
It is. It'll finish in a week or so. And right. actually, if you lost your cooling, the fermentation would get up over 100 degrees and might even kill the yeast.
Yeah, and kill everything
and
in its way.
Stop everything mm-hmm. in its path. So,
same way as if you're making cinnamon rolls, right? If you get your yeast too hot or the milk too hot that you bloom it in, it's going to kill the yeast.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So, you, Janet, do you have some sourdough for us? I think we're close enough for that. I'd like to try that with this. So you're saying in the notes that the same sourdough yeast starter that you use, or same sourdough starter, is what you put in the wine?
Well,
No, not quite.
My wife is a baker, and what she does is she gets sourdough starters from the vineyard. So she'll take grapes from the vineyard,
and
she'll lightly crush them and start a starter in flour and water, and she'll monitor that, and it'll slowly take off, and she'll feed it. We have a refrigerator home full of starters, all vineyard designated from different vintages, and they all have somewhat different characteristics. And I've even looked at them underneath a microscope, and morphologically they're different one from the other. And what's intriguing to me as a winemaker is we have this thing that's called terroir, and that's the effect of the site on the flavor of the grape.
The
land. That's the climate, it's the rain, the wind, the heat, it's the soil, and it's all that. And that will affect the flavor of the grapes. With the sourdough starter, has nothing to do with the terroir is still active, but it has nothing to do with the grape flavor itself, because that won't add anything. The grape flavor doesn't add anything to the starter, but it's all about the microbiology, the microflora that's on the grape.
Mm-hmm.
And that's defined by that terroir also. What kind of yeast will grow, what kind of bacteria will grow, and that's what makes that starter active and interesting and produces the sourness.
I just picture your wife on the, every morning just getting up and having 50 different little starter units that she has to feed every day.
She stays pretty busy with that. She does. So what we've got here is this is our McNairy Vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon jelly that she made also. This is made from the samples we bring into the winery to test the grapes to see if they're ready to pick. So rather than throwing them away, we take them home and turn them into jelly. The starter is from the Eagle and Plow Vineyard, Horse Heaven Hills.
Okay. So if people want to come visit your winery, because we only have just 30 seconds left, how do they do that?
Well, they come to Prosser. Four Feathers Wine Estates does not have its own label. We are a bulk wine facility and custom winemaking facility, so we make wines for other wineries. They send us their grapes, and we make them for them to their recipe, working with their winemakers. And we also make wine for other wineries from our grapes.
Do you take visitors and tours and things like that?
I'd be more than happy to take visitors.
All right, perfect. So Prosser is about 45 miles east of Yakima. It's where our farm is. You can always drive by our farm at the same time. And have a blast. Thank you so much for coming with us, Dave Forsyth of Four Feathers. We appreciate your visit and your sourdough.
Thanks, Tom.
And your
keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
Up next, Waitress the Musical is coming to the Paramount, and we are busy making pies with Ann Francis and Stacy Fortner to celebrate on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are in the kitchen. It's the Cairo Radio 97.3 Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society here in downtown Seattle. We have lots of things going on, including a brand new Broadway show coming to the Paramount Waitress.
Very exciting.
Why are you excited about it, Chef?
I love every time there's a new show at the Paramount.
Oh, okay. So, thought maybe you had some. Waitress, I believe the music by Sarah Borealis, right?
Yes, that is correct.
That's correct. We have Stacy Fortner, who's pastry chef for our entire company.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Stacy.
She is the pie queen. She's the one who's responsible, she and her team, for the coconut cream pie that we serve in all of our restaurants and our little Dahlia Bakery. And, of course, it was natural that she would be picked to judge the pie contest.
Yes, I love judging people. It's my favorite thing.
Wait, tell us more about this pie contest. What was the pie contest?
The pie contest was to win tickets to the show, hosted by Como. But more, it was about the story behind the pie. Mm-hmm. So really, it was a lot about the reason they made the pie and how it all came together. And so that was really fun. And in the end, they ended up giving.
Don't give away the...
Giving a secret special surprise.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
I didn't want you to get in trouble. You're under an NDA, right, or something like that. All right, so Ann Francis is also here from the Paramount Theater.
Hi.
This is very exciting. As you know, we are the, as some of you know, we are the concessionaires at the Paramount, so we kind of get in on these little cool deals that happen. And so Waitress is coming. Of course, Chef and the Chapeau and I are in this business. And it's just awesome.
It's great that the Paramount Theater has such an amazing chef behind the concessionaires. I work with a lot of theaters around the country, and it's just an honor to get to work with Tom Douglas on things like this.
Oh,
and
my
just
God.
Have, like, when our patrons come to our theater, you know, they get coconut cream pie bites or these really lovely, thoughtful cocktails. Mm-hmm. You guys just are the greatest. So
yeah, we do the premiere on Pine for the.
I know. I love that. And the, yes, I love that. That's in, you both are just so supportive of the arts and so supportive of the Paramount that we're very appreciative. But Waitress, of course, is a show about a woman who kind of lets a lot of her emotions out through her pie making as she's a waitress in a diner who makes all of the pies.
I can sympathize with letting your emotions out through pie making.
And that was the thing that I thought was great about the pie contest was the winners actually felt that making the dough was therapeutic for the daughter who had like a sort of issue with some muscular things. That just it's so beautiful to think about pies and cooking as being something communicative in that way, which is really what the show is all about. It's really
so
beautiful.
Not to give the show away, but how many pies do they make during the show?
They make four.
Wow.
So, and then if you go to see the show, which is still playing in New York, for the audiences, they sell little mason jars of pies so that you can kind of experience as you're smelling the pies coming from the stage and wafting through the lobby, you can actually eat a pie, which was how I met Stacy a few weeks ago and trying to devise what exactly we'll be doing during the show with your...
Well, we're going to be selling pies during the show. You'll be able to take one into the theater
with you. Yes, you can take it into the theater with a little spoon. And
Or take one out of the theater.
Yeah, you can take it home. You can take it home because we'll be selling them on the way out of the theater, which is unusual for us.
What I love is it's a little extra way to make money for the Paramount, too.
Exactly.
Because it is a nonprofit, and I think that's a great way to support it. Get a little souvenir pie when you're there. So it's my understanding, Stacy, did you hear this, that they actually pump the smells of baking pie crust?
You understand correct, Tom.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
they carry
the theater.
They carry a portable oven on the road with them so they can you can enjoy all the smells of the pies.
It's smell-o-vision. John Waters do something like smell. This is going to be better. I promise.
I like that.
So this show has been running nationwide. It's very popular, and I think the community activism through it has been quite amazing. When you look at, Evan Hansen?
Dear Evan Hansen, which is coming in January to the Paramount.
If you look at that show and the way they did that social media part of that show, and that's been happening as that tours the country, and people being able to look for help when they need it, and I think this is, in a funny way, the same kind of thing. This is about you and me, are the average everyday workers that are out there trying to bust it and make a living and then telling our story and feeling good about it.
I absolutely agree. I think it's very universal. It's not just about a woman who's a waitress in a diner. It's about anybody who finds an outlet that they love, that is creative, and, you know, kind of feed their soul through that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really beautiful show.
So when is the show? When is it at the Paramount?
It's at the Paramount September 11th through the 16th.
Okay.
And tickets are going really fast, so you want to check it out at stgpresents.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way to get tickets always.
Awesome. And you've got some pies coming to the Carlisle Room, which is right across from the Paramount Theater.
That's right.
That's our restaurant named after Brandi Carlisle. we're going to call her Pie-Lisle today. Anyway, so what have you brought here today that you made?
So today this is a rendition of one of the pies that we're going to be serving at the Paramount. We've added some cashews and brittle to it to make it like a cashew turtle chocolate pie.
Ooh. Cashew.
Yum.
That sounds good. Didn't think just chocolate was enough, so we got some caramel.
I'm going to taste it. Anybody else want to taste this pie?
Oh, my word, yes.
Anybody at home want to taste this pie?
We're also going to be serving a peach pie during the show and obviously the coconut cream pie. Mm.
But it looks like there's also going to be some savory stuff at the Carlisle Room as well, a corn and green chili hand pie.
You've done your homework, Katie.
Yeah, so you can just eat all the pies.
We'll be making those too. Yeah, we can, you know, every baker's favorite dessert is something savory.
Is that true?
Yes.
Because you get such a sweet mouth going that salt tastes particularly good, or chilies.
We love anything savory, so we definitely wanted to include a savory pie in the mix. Hmm. And in addition, the corn and the savory pie is coming from Prosser.
Oh, wow. Really? From Connie Crawford?
We're bringing that, and then we're using your wife Jackie's peppers in there.
We have plenty of those. Oh, my God. It's a pepper avalanche right now. We have over 3,000 pepper plants, and they are producing, like, in this hot summer, like crazy.
I took a couple of those plants home, and I can concur. Even the three I have, I can't keep up with
them. Really? They're growing here on the west side, too, huh?
Yeah.
I'll take them. I will take them.
We have had a unique summer here on the west side. 1 inch of rain in the last 140 days, which is The least amount.
One inch of rain?
1 inch in the last 140 days.
Oh,
the least
sad.
Amount in Seattle recorded history, I believe,
wow.
over this summertime. All right, so if you need tickets, you go to paramount.com.
Or stgpresents.org, yes.
stgpresents.org, and you get tickets. Mm-hmm. The pies are going to be available in the lobby.
Yes.
If you want to take a pie in with you. And again, it helps raise funds for STG and their mission, which is bringing the arts, opening doors,
yep.
literally, for people to share in the arts, especially young school kids. I know
yes.
there's many. Tell us about your school kid program.
This year, it kind of changes every single year. We've got a lot of standing programs like Disney Musicals in Schools, where we basically work with the Disney Corporation to bring children's versions of Aladdin and The Lion King to Title I schools throughout the entire King County region.
Mm-hmm.
We have a student matinee for Dear Evan Hansen, in which there'll be subsidized $10 tickets for students to have a whole entire educational program leading up to see the show.
I love that.
Such an important show for teenagers to see.
Exactly. And that happened during Hamilton, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. It's kind of like we took the idea of Hamilton and kind of thought, well, could we do this again for another show that mm-hmm. might be able to do a matinee during the week? And so we chose Dear Evan Hansen.
With arts funding drying up over and over and over again in our school system, it's somebody's got to step in, and I'm really proud of you guys for doing that.
Thank you.
And there's also the Broadway, what's the Broadway, not Broadway Cares, it's the Kid Broadway series that you do with the Moore.
Oh, with the Moore. Well, that's a different, the education department does a little bit more than
okay.
that than the Broadway side of things, since I just deal with the Broadway. But we do a lot with the education department, with every single Broadway show, trying to get kids to see the show, getting them to meet the actors with master classes, with even just like Disney has an initiative of just called Get Out and Move, which is bringing actors to elementary schools to teach them about fitness and eating right and all these different things. There's so many things encompass being a Broadway actor. It's not just about the arts. It's just kind of about making the arts matter to their day-to-day lives.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're big fans of the culinary arts, right, Chef?
Of course.
Yes.
You have
yes.
a favorite musical? Because, you know, I'm kind of a musical head. I like that genre.
Favorite musical. I'm going to go with...
Spider-Man?
No. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not, he said.
That would not be my favorite at all. No.
Okay. Katie, you know, favorite musical?
I like West Side Story.
West Side Story.
Classic.
I think Hamilton, to me, was a very big revelation.
So good.
Mm-hmm. I think it was an incredible different musical, and I really enjoyed the changes that came with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to more of that.
All right. If you want to taste some of Stacey Fortner's pastry chef for our TD restaurant group, go to the Carlisle, go to the Paramount, or go to any of our joints and have the coconut cream pie, or go to the Dahlia Bakery. If you want to see what Anne Francis works with every day, the fabulous thing that is the Paramount Theater and the Seattle Theater Group, I would check out some tickets at Waitress right away. And of course, if you take a subscription, right, you get all the shows.
Yes.
And you get maybe join the Paramount Club.
Oh yes,
Little thing in the basement that we do appetizers for.
Very classy.
Up next, we got What's in Your Fridge right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. You're in the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
We're happy to be here. We're here every Saturday and Sunday. Thank you for joining us, or you can podcast us, as my trainer did this morning. She was telling me about her drive from North Jersey to Austin, Texas, listening to our podcast.
Really?
That's a long show.
Very long show. Appropriately enough, she was listening to the segment where we had my daughter on, and we were talking about how do you decide where you're going to eat in another city when you don't know anyone or have any inside track. So,
did she use any of the tips?
She did. Although she said it worked out best for her to look at food blogs in the area. I said kind of like the local newspaper writer, but same thing, I think. What's in your fridge, KDO?
This is when we look into our listeners' fridge, should they let us know what's in there. And we went to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, and they kindly obliged by telling us what was in their fridge so that you two chefs could perhaps help build a lovely meal out of what they've got. Terry Roturo, I know you love this segment so very, very much. So we're going to start with the first fridge with you. And it comes from Chris Polk. He's got... clearly loving this, you know, the Washington summer here. Peaches, plums, avocados, heirloom tomatoes, Swiss chard, jalapenos, fresh halibut, and the normal things like eggs and butter and all that good stuff.
Mm. Well, I'm definitely making a beautiful end of summer salad here. I'm going to grill the avocado and the plum. Plum and the peaches.
Okay, got it.
And I will dice the avocado.
Avocado's good on the grill.
Dice the avocado. I'm not a big fan of that. I've tried that, and for some reason I wasn't that...
It's okay, chef.
It wasn't
personal.
For you.
Diced avocado, diced tomato. Make a wonderful little salad with that. Olive oil, salt, pepper. Just a little bit of lemon juice or lime juice if you have lime. And then put your diced peaches and plum into that. So you have a beautiful little kind of a stew salad idea. And then I would take the Swiss chard and throw them on the grill as well. And give them a nice little char, so you have nice little green Swiss chard chard to mix with that salad. And, of course, grill the halibut as well, because since the grill is on, I might as well use that heat. Now, I would be very careful about how I grill my halibut, because it dries out very quickly and very nicely if you don't pay attention. I would probably start it by marking it on the meat side first, which is inside of the fish meat, and then I would flip it over and put it on a platter or on a sheet pan of some kind. Not keep it on the heat, the full heat. Close the lid and then finish it like it's in an oven. So you'll bake it and you'll have beautiful flaky halibut. Put that on top of that salad and here we go. Celebrate summer.
Yeah, I would be doing a halibut fish taco with a little salsa, fresh fruit salsa with plum and jalapeno and peaches. And
you do love a fish taco this time of year.
Actually, any time of the year.
Any time of the year.
I love how you said that. It is literally the last thing I order at a restaurant.
Really?
Yes.
I feel like on this show, though, when like a fish comes up in people's fridges, like you're pretty ready to go with the fish taco.
I bet if we were to look back, never mind. Let's not go. What's the next fridge?
Okay. The next fridge is for you, Tom. This is from Michelle Bernath, and I'm going to start this by saying that she says, just to make it more interesting, I don't have an actual kitchen. I have a microwave, two-burner hot plate, and a griddle, which she affectionately refers to as her easy bake oven. So, with all that in mind...
My goodness. Sounds like Sarah before she moved to her new house.
Well, before she was maybe perhaps on the show with us and learning all the things. So, Michelle's got, in terms of foodstuffs, eggs, salami, pepperoni... She wanted to add in that she has Miracle Whip and that she's sorry because I'm sure that offends you professionals. And then from there, it's a lot of ginger ale, pineapple juice, coconut rum. It sounds like she's making cocktails, perhaps.
I think we're making Hawaiian plate food. Lunch.
Yeah? What do we? Well, please, tell me more.
Well, certainly with eggs and salami and things like that, all you need to do is make a little gravy, and she got pineapple juice.
Yeah.
We can marinate the gravy and pineapple. Just brown your onions, right? And instead of stock, use pineapple juice. So you get the sweet Hawaiian gravy.
Okay.
And put that on top of your rice cakes, your masubi.
I'm laughing because I'm like...
Whatever you do, don't put it in a taco because Katie wants to put tacos in a corner.
And don't use a Miracle Whip on that.
I mean, she likes Miracle Whip.
Use Miracle Whip in your mac salad because Hawaiian plate breakfast or lunch comes with a mac salad.
There you go.
And then that add a little sriracha, so you have a spicy macaroni salad and a burger patty and a little top with salami and pepperoni. And pineapple gravy.
Yeah, good job, Tom.
Okay. I like the pineapple gravy, though. That's good.
The next fridge is for you, Terry. This is a pretty short one. It's from Rick Lyons. He's got mustard, mayo, beer, eggs, garlic, Gatorade, and burger patties.
Make a reservation at Luca Lule. We'll take care of you.
Kind of seems a little bit like Tom's last suggestion.
It does seem a little
bit.
A Sloppy Joe's would work there.
No, you know? I would make burger patties with the nice sunny side up eggs on top. You know, you just cook those burger patties and you don't need to have bread. If you don't have any bread, well, that's too bad for you. No buttons, but...
That's all right. They're on a low-carb diet.
That's right. Maybe a keto diet then. Or something like that.
And then, the mustard, definitely. I would use that to put on all over the patty and just below the egg and... When you eat I love a burger patty with an egg on it. I love that.
Why? It seems to be the rage, but I don't quite get it.
It's not a rage. I mean, this is like...
It's been going on for a long time, I understand, but like putting an egg on... Eggs, in my mind, unless you're eating them plain, they virtually have no flavor. All they do is add a little fat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a little texture, too, because I like my sunny side up soft.
Over a burger? Come on.
Yeah, so
come on. The burger's got much
the...
more texture.
Ah, well, you know.
I'm asking a very relevant question.
Why do you put water?
I just think it's more of a fad to put an egg on everything rather than.
Why do you put water in your doers?
Because so do the Scots put water in it also.
So
too
the reason
strong.
You should put an egg
so
on
it's too strong. So
Tom,
I like to
the
thin
reason
it out.
You should put an egg on your burger is because the French do it.
They got to thin out. They got to thin French out school.
That is a bunch of burger bologna, right
that is
there.
That's true.
The French didn't even have hamburgers until when?
Until the German invented
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
And they realized that was a good idea.
This feels like a made up history fact.
I know.
Right? Exactly. I just don't know if I'm believing any
it's
of
called
this.
Hamburger à cheval, steak à cheval is what it's called, so which means then you have the egg on top.
Mm-hmm.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Okay. We're moving on to the next fridge. That's what we're going to do. Marie.
It's getting deep in here.
I know. We're only so far through this show. We've got a lot more energy to keep up here. The next fridge comes from Maureen, and she has cooked chicken breast, walnuts, light beer, avocados, banana peppers, cheddar cheese, corn tortillas, flaxseed, if you want to throw flaxseed in there, some almond milk, and all the other kind of regular condiments.
So she really wants you to use that tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
Cooked chicken breast,
yeah. Light beer, avocados.
It sounds to me like it's chicken a la king time. Because
ooh.
I'm sure she has a little, so make a little biscuit, right? Mm-hmm. And then you just make white milk or cream gravy with chicken and the peas out of her freezer, because everyone's got peas in their freezer in case you get a little
owie.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. have to put a bag of peas on it. And then, you know, the carrots, the last of the carrots, the last of the celery, onions, and just make a little chicken a la king gravy over top of fresh homemade biscuit, and then top with sliced avocado, and you're home free.
Wow, that sounds delicious.
And then don't forget to put out the Tabasco, because that kind of dish really needs.
And you like the
chipotle sauce.
Tabasco.
I do.
Is that correct?
I do. It's got a little smoky quality.
I like the Moroccan harissa on top of that.
So kill me already. It's time for our favorite taste of the week coming right up after the break. And I had mine last night at about 11 o'clock at night. Just saying. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Thank you for hanging that long break. I'm Chef Tom Douglas, owner of several of Seattle's finest restaurants here in downtown Seattle.
And I'm Terry Brochure, the chef in the hat, owner of Luke in Madison Valley and Lule downtown Seattle at the corner of 6th and Union, bottom of the Sheraton.
And I'm Katie O, your co-host. Tom, I am dying to know about your taste of the week. You've been teasing us since the beginning of taping this show that you ate a very late dinner last night.
Mm-hmm. I often do, though.
Do you?
Yeah, I don't think it's good for me. Something tells me.
Something tells me it's not.
Could be my 44-inch waistline.
Oh. Just that small little hint there. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, where were you?
Well, first of all, let's talk about what's still coming on the show.
Oh, please.
So we have Dave Ashley still coming up from Elliott Bay Brewery, talking mm-hmm. about barrel-aging beers. And we've got the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, which I believe you're playing today, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And we're hosting a dinner party.
So
as we like to do.
You're hosting a dinner party. Terry and
we're
just
cooking.
Your cooks.
That's right. Yeah. Just the way that I like it. So
my taste of the week really was, and this is an old Seattle restaurant at this point, Bastille. I haven't been there in quite a long time. But it seems like they have a new chef, and they have much more of a little bit of an Asian influence on their French classic cooking that they specialize in. And I really enjoyed it. I just thought it was a fun meal, and I can't really pick one bite of the evening, but I just thought my entire meal was really stellar. So congrats to those guys. I had everything from lamb belly with some heirloom beans, which is not usually my gig, but they were delicious. Probably the best thing was that Romanesco, kind of cross between cauliflower and broccoli,
mm-hmm.
With a Romanesco sauce on it,
mm-hmm.
Which was really... Or Romesco sauce.
Romesco.
Which is a roasted pepper and almond sauce. And I just thought everything was right on the money last night. And a delicious bottle of Burgundy from the Côte de Nuit. So anyway, it was a pretty darn good meal, and we were desperate. It was Labor Day, and everything was closing early, and I thought, okay, we're just going to go to Bastille because that's the last thing open after the theater in Ballard. And it turned out spectacular. So.
Which is also great to hear because these restaurants, you know, as you said, it's actually kind of an older restaurant at this point. I remember when they opened up, but it's good to be reminded of the delicious restaurants that have had a hold, you know, in our neighborhoods.
And plus the place is beautiful. That the design they
very
did there
beautiful.
Was spectacular.
Nicely designed. Absolutely.
Anyway, congrats to those guys. Really nice.
For me, it was a little baked plum. I bought some plum the other day at the store, and they were fantastic. Actually, perfectly ripe. Cut them in half, toss them in some like turbinado sugar. I had some turbinado sugar. I put that in there, and some what else? I put some a little bit of spice in there. I used some ground nutmeg and ground cinnamon. Put just a little bit of that in there, and toss that, and leave the plum on the counter for probably 3-4 hours. Let them macerate a little bit. And then I throw them with a little bit of butter because otherwise it's not really good. So anyway, put a little bit of butter in there. Put them on a sheet pan and bake them really nicely until they're totally soft and tender. They were already ripe, so totally soft and tender. And then just some plain old good vanilla ice cream right on top of that and serve that as a dessert. And it was... I wish I had some now. How's that?
And you didn't... Did you say you served it on top of the dessert or as the dessert?
As the dessert.
Okay.
In a bowl, half a plum, which is totally caramelized by the time you finish to bake it.
Did you not like your guests? Why wouldn't you give them a whole plum?
Well, you know. 46 versus 28.
Oh, okay.
How's that?
Yeah.
Do I have to go any longer?
Or maybe just keep them coming back for more.
This is the explanation of why. At my age, I try to be... You know, having the best bite ever, but
rather
not,
than quantity,
but not a bucket of it.
Yeah, no kidding. I have to learn that lesson.
If you can restrain yourself just a little bit, that scale will go down slowly, but surely will go down. I mean, mine goes up and down. I don't know what's wrong with my scale. It keeps going up and down.
You need a new scale, I think.
But don't you know, it's hard. It's hard sometimes. I was in the restroom last night at this restaurant, and one of the workers there came in and said, Tom Douglas is sitting in the dining room. It's like, dude, I'm right here.
What's
funny about it is that, you know, you talk about not eating as much, right? And then
they send you a couple plates.
They send you all this stuff on top of everything that you already ordered, and it's like, okay, it's 11 o'clock, and now I'm stuffed.
I never will forget the time that I went into, I don't need to name the restaurant, but I went into this restaurant, and the chef, you know, recognized me, and I was with my wife and two boys at the time. This is about 8 years ago, 10 years ago. And the guy sent us a platter. I'm not lying. It was at least 18-inch round of a platter full of, sardines, grilled sardines. My wife doesn't eat that. My son did not want to eat it. I swear to God, there was at least 12 sardines on that plate.
Oh, man. That's a commitment.
All
and this is a freebie.
You
know, somebody's like trying to be nice to you and sending you that, and you're like, well, thanks, buddy. That's a very nice gift, but now I'm really embarrassed because I can't eat 18 sardines. Anyway, moderation is Tom's favorite quote from Julia Child.
That's right. Everything in moderation, including moderation. KDO, favorite taste of the week?
Favorite taste of the week. I had a little Labor Day brunch at Bar Melusine on Capitol Hill. And I like to have a little sweet something before I dip into the savory. And there was a crepe Suzette on the menu that was bathed in butter by the time that I got to.
You said you like to have a little sweet before a savory?
Yeah. For my brunch, I like a little sweet something with my coffee.
Oh, for your brunch. For your brunch.
Brunch.
For my brunch, I like a little sweet something. And I wanted to try this crepe. I mean, they make crepes. Must be delicious. And it was. It had a citrus butter. It was a buckwheat flour crepe. Nice little crispy lacy edges, and it was perfect.
I gotta say, life's too short to eat crepes that are not buckwheat.
Yeah.
I love that earthy flavor, and I just think it's so much more interesting than just a regular kind of white flour crepe. Personally, I just think that's awesome. And that's
I'm
a Normandy thing, right?
Yeah, it is very much and in Normandy, this is what they use mostly for all the savory crepes. You know, we're not that used to savory crepe, but all the savory crepes in Normandy are made with buckwheat. And serve with a cider, raw cider.
Right.
Those two together match really well.
Yeah.
Very earthy flavors, but anyway, I would highly recommend. It was quite
tasty.
And
that was where?
At Bar Melusine up on Capitol Hill for a nice little
where
brunch.
Where on Capitol Hill?
It is...
I feel like I've been there, but I can't...
It's on, on University between... on 10 and University, right next to Bateau, the steakhouse.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah,
Bar Melusine
yeah.
is
yeah.
one
that's
of...
Rene Erickson's
Rene Erickson's restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I knew I'd been there. I just couldn't remember the name. Okay, Katie, you're hosting a dinner party coming up next, and we are your in-house chefs on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show, and we are in it. We're the host with the sum.
Not the mostest.
We're not the host with the mostest. We're the host with some.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little. And, Katie, you're having a party. And I don't even know who you're inviting. I'm so behind on this one.
That's okay. So, as we do with the dinner parties, we have one special ingredient, and then we invite an equally special guest. Today, our ingredient that we'll be using in every single course is the tortilla. You can use a flour tortilla. You can use a corn tortilla. Heck, if you want to make a Spanish tortilla just to throw things off a little bit, be my guest. You are the chefs. And our guest of honor for this particular one is going to be Diana Kennedy.
Mexican queen.
Yes, that's right. The woman, not unlike Julia Childs, who brought a lot of Mexican cuisine into the consciousness of America through her cookbooks, Diana Kennedy. Someone who I met very early on, actually working with you, Tom. She was here on a book tour quite a bit ago.
Yes. But so, she's very serious. I'm not sure I can, have a fun night. I mean,
she is very intense. I remember her leaning in a lot, talking very close about Mexican
cooking. We'll do tequila shots to start, and I think
loosen her up a bit.
Yeah,
loosening up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, who would like to take the appetizer, the tortilla-themed appetizer?
Yeah, we're going to make a little play on tortilla soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah. I like tortilla.
So we're going to make a tomato water margarita. So we're going to take fresh tomatoes, because this time of year there's always extras. We're going to puree them, then drain them through a sieve. And then we're going to take that water and add tequila to it. And we're going to, I guess maybe just a little bit of chipotle, some lime juice, and a little avocado on a stick. Because I love cool avocado in my cool drink. And then we're going to garnish with crispy tortillas. And we're going to have a tortilla soup margarita.
I'm excited by that.
Do you like this? Do you like this, too?
I'm liking this.
Yes.
I'm liking this.
Okay. I think Diana Kennedy would like your...
I don't think she would.
You know, honestly, secretly, I also was thinking that she wouldn't, but I wanted to make you feel good.
But here's the thing.
It's not important.
She's a guest.
I'm the chef. She's the guest. She's going to be polite and courageous and drink it.
She'll be thankful either way.
And she'll tell Tom how much she loved it.
Terry, what about you? What
I'm
going to
do a little tortilla, corn tortilla, and I'm going to do a duck breast. Really nicely slow and cooked very slow, and then finished at the end by searing the skin. I'm going to cook it very slowly first, but then finish at the end and searing the skin. And then julienne that whole, slice that meat really thin, and then put that into a taco with, I'm going to use tomato as well. I'm going to use avocado, and I'm going to use cilantro, lots of it. Make like a nice little salsa and put all that together with the duck breast. And I'm also going to do a little bit of a mole sauce. You know, just on the side, because I love sauce. And then drizzle that all over my tortilla before I roll it. And I think that would be absolutely delicious, and I think Diane will like that.
Do you?
Yeah.
He's feeling confident.
You know, there's nothing in there that's not good. She might say, that's a little bit French.
But what would she expect from such a lovely Frenchman?
You know, you can run away from it, but you can't hide from it. How's that?
Who's more famous, Diana Kennedy or Rick Bayless? I think Rick Bayless is for Mexican food.
Rick has more media behind him.
Definitely more media.
Yeah.
He's had his PBS show for so long. I use his I used his recipe for tortillas last night. So, yes, he is a definite go-to in that realm. Tom, main course tortillas.
Main course tortillas. Are we even allowed? We're not Mexican. Are we allowed to be cooking Mexican food? It seems to be coming up more and more, this cultural appropriation thing.
I mean, only you can answer where your heart lies and how you are doing it, frankly.
Make it a seafood one.
Yes, I think something like halibut Veracruz.
Yeah.
Or something of that nature. Yeah. You know, I don't know exactly what that is. But
are you going to make it up right now?
You say they have to be corn tortillas?
No, they can be flour tortillas if you'd like.
Okay. So halibut Veracruz with corn tortillas. sweet corn tortilla quesadilla. And then I'm going to serve it, that quesadilla, with a nice little filet of halibut with a Veracruz sauce. I think of that being kind of olive and citrus and red onion and lots of cilantro.
I didn't know that. Is there olive in Veracruz?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'm the chef here.
Okay.
This is my dish.
Let's call it Tom Cruise then.
Yes.
He's looking in my fridge. He's seeing
Sarah
what's
can look
available.
Up sauce Veracruz and maybe... maybe we can find out exactly what's that. But that's what I think of it as being kind of seaside and fresh.
Yep.
Lots of vinegar or sour orange.
Sure.
Or some serrano chilies, things like that. And just a big wood roasted chunk of halibut to go. And I'm going to serve it with a crispy quesadilla. And my quesadillas, I put the cheese on the inside and the outside.
Oh, so you crisp up the cheese?
I put the cheese, the grated cheese, right on the griddle. And then I put my quesadilla on top of the cheese.
Oh, nice.
And so that it browns on the outside and melts on the inside. And then I turn it over and do the same thing. And you have this really crunchy,
yeah,
cheesy
like,
quesadilla.
Yeah, crispy cheese. That's cool.
Was I anywhere close?
You're a little bit close. I think you were thinking briny, so you went with the olives. Mm-hmm. But in fact, what we're seeing with a lot of the recipes is actually capers. So if you asked Martha Stewart, she would tell you.
Well, she's not invited to dinner. Let's ask Diana Kennedy.
Well, Martha Stewart came up first on our Google search, so we're going to use Martha Stewart. But it's olive oil, white onion, pimento stuffed green olives. Oh, there are green olives. I'm sorry.
Yeah, usually when it says
capers.
Olives, that means there's olives in it.
Well,
yeah.
I was reading
Thank
quickly as I was trying to listen to you at the
Thank
same time.
Much.
I can't mm-hmm. multitask mm-hmm. quite like that.
So anyway, so that's just a fresh seaside
yeah,
kind
and
of...
Yeah, that sounds really delicious. Yeah. I think she would really enjoy that.
Okay,
I'm
Tira, you've got 2 minutes.
I'm going to do a corn tortilla softly on the griddle. And then do some caramelized bananas and do a nice little caramelized banana chocolate sauce rolled into a wonderful little tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
Slice that in small pieces and don't forget whipped cream at the end. Vanilla, bourbon, Mexican, not bourbon, Mexican, Mexican vanilla whipped cream on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be a little delicious.
I see what you did there. You made like a crepe.
Exactly.
Out of a tortilla.
Exactly. And what's wrong with that? It's the same idea.
It is the same idea. It is the same idea.
You want
idea.
Me to use tortilla? I use tortilla. You could do it also with just caramelized banana and fried tortilla chips. Then you would break down mm-hmm. on top of, you know, with powdered sugar. Break that down on top of your banana. That would also be delicious.
That sounds better to me, the second version.
Yeah.
With
for
a
some
little
reason.
crispy something.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a big banana person in desserts. And it's I like adding that crunch to it.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think?
What are we drinking?
But I'll tell you one thing.
We're barely drunk. You know, this. I want to say it's called this Santa Maria Valley in northwest Mexico, I believe it is. Great wine region. So,
well, with the banana, I would drink some mezcal.
Mezcal, a little smoky tequila.
Yeah, nice
smoky
little smoky
with the
tequila.
Sweet and the banana.
Yeah, with
that
the banana, caramelized
good.
Banana. And
what
chocolate.
Do we think our friend Diana Kennedy thinks of this meal?
She's desperate to go home right now.
It's past her bedtime.
She wants to vomit, and she's been forced to eat all this weird stuff that American French cooks are making.
That's right. It's not authentic.
She looked at us, and she said, "Do you guys know I wrote some Bible about Mexican food? You should read it.
You should read it once in a while."
Yeah, we've ignored it entirely.
All right, Dan Ashley's up next from Elliott Bay Brewing. We're going to talk a little bit about putting beer in oak barrels. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show. Everyone's very excited. They just got their breakfast sandwich, chowing down. Did you guys get my mustard out there? Did that get passed around? After the sandwich. Oh, great, Jenna.
Oh, boy.
Jenna, you did fabulous, because that's how they should taste it.
Jenna is, she's got the daggers in her eyes right now. She's got a knife in her hand, and she's thinking about committing capital crimes.
And she's laughing very
Janet
loudly.
Janet is the house chef here, so you have to be careful with her. Dan Ashley is here of Elliott Bay Brewing. They're doing some really cool things over there with barrel-aged beers. And we're going to ask him about things like spontaneous fermentation and all the local fruits that are here growing right now. So let's welcome Dan to the show. Hey.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Now, let's have just a short conversation about you wearing an Oakland A's cap to Seattle Mariner country.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm a transplant.
Unfortunately, it's a good place to start. Yeah.
I've been getting grief up here for about 10 years now. Uh-huh. So,
you're a strong man.
Yeah. So you can't take a hint.
Yeah, I know, but at the same time, I can't hide my colors either. So
hide your colors.
It is. It is what I am.
You gotta respect a man that says
yes. You know what? My respect to you.
In spite of all the of all the criticism.
Oh, listen to Chef over there, Mr. World Cup champion.
Well, he's not giving it. Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, when you're good, you're good, and you know, you gotta go with that. I mean,
it doesn't go away when we're not good either.
Exactly.
It's there all the time.
That's a true support right there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to accept that answer, and I'm just going to move on.
Okay.
Seems to me, after 10 years, you should get over it. Become a local.
He already told you he's not.
Okay. Anyway, Dan, tell us about the brewery, the Elliott Bay Brewing, and you have a Lake City location, right, which is where you brew out of?
That's correct, yeah. Elliott Bay Brewing has been started as a brew pub in West Seattle about 21 years ago. So it's been around for quite some time. They have three locations. The second one opened up in Burien about 10 years ago, and then the Lake City location opened up about 5 years ago. And then in the last year, we opened up our new barrel age venue called Brother Barrel, which is in the same building as our Lake City pub. And that's where we focus on barrel aged beers and ciders and cocktails and wine and all the other things that we can't really feature in our regular brew pub setting, you know, a little fancier food, 21 and over, that kind of thing. So, I got started with Elliott Bay about 10 years ago. I came in for a tour, met my boss, Doug Heinemann, and he took me on a tour of the Burien place, and they had three or four wine barrels aging beer in it. And I said that's where I wanted to work. I was really interested in aging beer in different kinds of barrels, but it was very impressive that they had committed that much, you know, 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And
is there any other brewery around the world that do that?
Or
Okay.
Yeah, quite a lot. I think sour beer is kind of gaining a lot of traction currently. The Belgians have been brewing beer in barrels for thousands of years now. So that's what kind of drew me into Elliott Bay originally. And about 5 years ago, I took over managing the barrel age program, in addition to being the head brewer at the Lake City pub. And we've been growing that program up. So we went from about five barrels 10 years ago to, I think we have about 200 or so different barrels.
From five to 200, yeah. That's an increase.
So what does that do to a beer, and how long do you have to leave it in barrel to make a difference?
Well, it depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you're just trying to infuse the flavor of what had been in the barrel previously, that happens pretty quickly.
So that's either a wine barrel or a whiskey barrel, so if you're trying to get that flavor.
We've also used Tabasco barrels and tequila and rum barrels and port barrels. So, yeah, if you're just trying to get that flavor into your beer, it happens pretty quickly, so like 3 to 6 months is kind of the minimum. One of my real passions is sour beer, and that process can take from 6 months to 2 years. So,
and what's creating that sour flavor? Because as you just said, they are becoming more popular, and in fact, when you go to many breweries or you go to places that obviously specialize in these beers, you'll see these gigantic sections of sour beers now. So where does that flavor profile come from?
Yeah, it comes from a mixed fermentation. So two organisms are working side by side. You have yeast that's turning the sugar into alcohol, but you also have different types of bacteria that are creating lactic acid by and large. And so they're using the same sugar source and going through different metabolic processes. And so yeast turns it into alcohol, and then the bacteria that we co-ferment it with turns it into lactic acid for the most part.
So is there still the same amount of sugar in a sour beer than there is in a normal beer, like an IPA?
Oftentimes it'll be quite a bit less because the bacteria can continue fermentation past the point that yeast can go.
Yeah.
It has processes that can break down more complex sugars, which is what's left over after a primary fermentation.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, as long as the acid is not just acid, because I've had some sour beer that were like just too sour for me. But in general, I like sour beer more than I like. I find a lot of the beers too sweet.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not my style for me.
I think balance is as important in sour beer as it is in IPAs.
Right,
I think
there
was a trend of trying to make the most bitter IPAs maybe 5-10 years ago, and everyone tried to make doubles and triple IPAs. And I think you kind of lost the balance of enjoying what you're actually drinking. And I think the same thing is holds true for sour beer.
Yeah,
I think there's
it.
Some people that just try and make it as sour as possible. And I don't particularly find that enjoyable
either. No, I'm with you. Balance, I think, is very important, yes.
It sounds like you're using a ton, so to speak, of Northwest fruits now in your beer.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we have such a plentiful collection of berries and other fruits grown here in Washington that it is quite easy to get it in quickly. I'm sure you guys know as restaurateurs that, you know, the faster you can get your fruit to your table, the more ripe, the more flavorful it'll be. You don't have to pick it ahead of its ripeness. You can pick it one day and use it the next. So the beer that you guys have in front of you is our spontaneous Cabernet beer. So what we did with that is we brewed a golden beer straight from the kettle into our wine barrels, and we used the natural native yeast and bacteria that were growing on Cabernet grapes to ferment it. And so we added about 40 pounds of Cabernet grapes into the barrel as we were filling it. And that was all that we used as an inoculant for the beer. So you can see that it's quite
beautiful.
Pink.
It's very fresh. It's very the fruit is not just taking over the whole thing. You have a beautiful layer of flavor. I think it's delicious.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There's vanilla character from the barrels, just like you'd get in a Cabernet wine. I think it's definitely a pretty complex beer. It was a bit of an experiment and just kind of, you know, there's a natural wine kind of trend. I'm not a big wine drinker, I'm afraid, so I don't know how big of a trend it is, but, you know, we knew that going in there were these native cultures on the grapes that we could use to ferment the sugar that we supplied it. So it got some sugar from the Cabernet grapes, and then it also got the sugar that we added from the beer, and used those combination of sugars to create the alcohol and the acidity that you're tasting in the beer.
Yeah, it's very cool. I like that a lot.
It's a little bit in my mind, a little bit like when I was first becoming a chef and the whole fusion food thing was happening.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see alcohol going through the same process of kind of combining techniques and flavors. And I mean, we went from really just Red Hook Brewery, 25, 30 years ago, to now we're doing just all kinds of
all
crazy
kinds of
stuff.
And
you're making cocktails out of beer, right? And
The bartenders are the mixologists that we have at Brother Barrel are mixing in some of the sour beers, some of the more traditional style beers into their cocktails at Brother Barrel. So there's all kinds of ways of layering flavor that it's more complex than just, you know, making a batch of IPA and putting it in a patron's pint glass. And, you know, that's kind of the end of its life. There's just a lot more possible flavors that we can use and make in the beer.
Right.
Now, is this always, not to end on a negative, but is this always a good thing? Or are you just bored and you want to try something new?
I have been very intrigued by sour beer ever since
I started
brewing. So it's a style.
Yeah.
I've been to Belgium twice where it really, the sour beers are kind of, the idea of it is coming out of Belgium, and then American breweries are kind of putting their own twist on it. But For me, it's a very fun connection to the history of brewing. Mm-hmm. You know, stainless steel and microscopes are pretty new in the history of brewing beer. And so the connection to the sour beer making of Europe, where probably everything was sour before they were using lots of hops.
It conserves better and longer if you have higher acidity. You know,
yeah, it's shelf stable. Right. It lasts longer than just having a real fresh hop-driven beverage, which, you know, that character is going to dissipate quite a lot faster than the acidity of these beers.
Cool.
Speaking of hops, man, the valley is aromatic right now. The Yakima Valley by our farm is aromatic with hops.
I believe it.
Dan Ashley of Elliott Bay Brewing. Go check him out up in Lake City if you want to see his own personal area. If not, check out one of their breweries and pubs around town. Up next, we have Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. You too can get a ticket to this show and be part of this fabulous fun that we have here every week. Going to HotStoveSociety.com. $15 includes breakfast.
And lots of entertainment.
Let's jump right into our tasty trivia competition. Tina is going to be our presenter today. KDO is going to be the victim.
That's right.
And commentary are going to thrash her today.
Tina,
all right,
take us
y'all,
through it.
Here's how this game is played. Each of you gets five questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner, obviously, and whoever gets the least amount correct is the loser. And that loser has to give away something to one of our fans of this radio program. Today you'll be playing for Michelle, who's in our audience, and it's her birthday.
Happy birthday, Michelle!
So happy birthday, Michelle. So, Chef Thierry, should you lose the quiz, what will you give to the lovely Michelle?
Michelle, have you
birthday?
Been to Luc before?
Michelle, all right,
we send you to brunch for two at Luc on a Saturday or Sunday.
Wonderful. Miss Katie O, if you should lose today, what will you give away to Michelle?
Well, we are lucky enough to have a pair of tickets to Cirque du Soleil's Volta, which is going to be over at Merrimore Park, playing from September 7th through November 4th. So if I should lose, Michelle, you get two tickets to Volta.
Wow. Super fun. Two great prizes on the table. Tom Douglas, what will you give to Michelle?
Well, in honor of waitress coming, I'm going to give dinner for two at Carlisle Room, and she can have each of the pies. So our savory, our
full
two dessert pies. Yes. Along with her dinner. Along with dinner. I'm not just going to cut
pie.
Her off with the pie.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, don't eat 2 days before. That should be plenty.
So dinner for two, $100 gift card at the Carlisle Room.
Wow. Great.
These are some awesome prizes on the table. Who would like to go first?
I'll start.
Chef Thierry, on what vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when making an oath? Is it celery, a carrot, or an onion?
I'm going to go with celery.
The answer, I'm sorry, is the onion because it's round. It's shaped like eternity.
I knew
That's
that.
That's why they did that.
I was just trying to see the celery
right,
made it the same way.
All right, your next question. How many flowers are in the design stamped on each side of an Oreo cookie? Is it 12, 10, or 8?
I'm really trying to see what an Oreo cookie
when
looks
you've
like.
Inspected all your Oreo cookies.
Have you ever seen one, an Oreo cookie?
Yes, I have seen it, but not many times.
How do you eat an Oreo cookie, Chef?
Very slowly. Possibly.
It's not the answer I was looking for.
No, I'm going to say 12.
Correct. Nice job.
Okay.
Nice guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Chef, question number three. What European nation consumes more spicy Mexican food than any other? Is it France, Norway, or Spain?
No way.
Correct.
No way. Oh, come on. That's funny stuff.
That's pretty good. Nice job, TD.
Pretty good.
Dad jokes all day long. All right, Chef, that's two out of three correct. Your fourth question. What part of the banana is used to make banana oil? Is it the peel, the actual fruit, or no part at all? Because banana oil is synthetic.
Oh, I'll go with number three.
Correct.
Banana oil is definitely synthetic.
I like how you said that. Oh, I'll go with number three.
It sounds like some very fake kind of oil.
Chef, that's a very fine showing. Three out of four correct. Let's see if you can get this one right. What is the most widely eaten fish in the world? Salmon, herring, or cod?
So it's not salmon. It's going to be between herring and cod, and I'm going to go cod.
No.
Dang it.
Herring is the answer. All right.
I just don't like it as much as I like cod.
You didn't want to hear herring.
I just didn't want it to be that.
Miss Katie O.
How do you think the Scots get all that herringbone tweed?
Oh, is that what they do with the extra herringbones? They just weave it on into their fabrics. Never knew. Good fact, Tom.
Fascinating information here at Seattle Kitchen. All right, Miss Katie, you are three. You got to beat three now.
Okay.
All right, you ready? What is the name of the evergreen shrub from which we get capers?
Yeah. No options with that,
It's a caper, caper tree.
I couldn't think of
anything.
I was
going to say the caperberry tree. The caper tree?
Yeah.
That's my final answer. I don't have anything
else. It's the caper bush, really.
The caper bush.
Not
a tree.
Nope.
Oh.
So I don't know what to do there.
I don't really either.
Okay, I feel like you didn't get that one correct.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, your next question. What fruits were crossed to produce the nectarine?
Oh, let's see. That seems like a peach and, cheese. A peach and
no cheese, some... no cheese. There's no cheese in nectarine.
No cheese? No cheese. Okay.
Nachos.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you knew that.
All right, Katie.
A plum.
It's just a two-hour show.
Actually, it's kind of tricky. None. The nectarine is a smooth skin variety of the peach.
What?
You gave me
a trick.
You gave me a trick question?
Can we still be friends?
Seems like someone's going to go to see Cirque du Soleil here.
Question number three, Katie. What animal's milk is used to make authentic Italian mozzarella cheese?
Buffalo.
Correct. Good job. What nation produces 2/3 of the world's vanilla?
Madagascar.
Nicely done.
Although, see very hard to get that vanilla. Difficult. Thought about our tasting the other day as I purchased some.
Which has the most protein? Beef, fish, or chicken breast?
Ounce for ounce, I couldn't tell you, but I know that people that do weight training love to eat chicken breast, so that's what I'm going to say.
Nicely done. You've tied with Terry. 3 out of 5 correct.
All right. I'll take it.
All righty, you guys. This is getting serious.
Juicy.
Tom, you need to get 3 questions correct in order to be on the board today.
Okay.
You ready for it?
I don't know.
What American city produces most of the egg rolls sold in grocery stores in the United States?
Los Angeles.
No. Houston.
Houston.
Houston, we have a problem.
All righty.
No, we have an egg roll.
Tom, where did the pineapple plant originate?
Hawaii.
Nope.
Costa Rica.
I had some options.
Nicaragua.
Nope.
Central.
You're getting there. Warm. You're warming up. You're warming up.
Haiti.
Nope. South America.
South America.
All righty.
That's not a country. South America is not a country.
Did I say a country? No, I said where did the pineapple plant originate? Okay. Didn't give a country.
If I had known that, I would have gotten South America.
Where did the pineapple plant originate?
I think you would have.
Where
said
in the world
North
is
America.
All I said.
Is that where Carmen Sandiego is from also?
Yes. Tom, question number 3. What is the correct technical name for a jigger of grain alcohol? Want some options?
Sure.
A horse, a cow, or a pony?
A pony.
Yep. I just made those multiple choice up right now.
I could.
You did?
Oh,
you're good.
Thanks, everybody.
You're really good.
Thank you. Okay, question number 4. What does red velvet cake get its red color from?
Red dye number 3, 4, 6, and 12.
Nope.
Beets.
Nope. Nope. Although I've said beets too. It says here crushed beetles.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Carnegieans?
Yeah, but they have
called?
Eaten previously eaten red dye number 3.
Man, I've never had to add that to my devil cake. I don't know what.
Hey, Tom, what food item?
Mulligatawny.
That's correct. You still lose, though. Tom, that was...
That was good.
2 out of 5 were correct for you, Tom. That means that the lovely Michelle will be heading over
to the
play.
Waitress.
Happy birthday, Michelle.
Hopefully, Michelle, you can get tickets to Waitress and go over to the Paramount and come over to the Carlisle, those pre- and post-funk and all the things you get to do with your $100 gift card. If you'd like to be part of our show like the lovely Michelle, go to, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter, Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Knoll at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz. Happy birthday to her. And sound engineer Sean, don't call me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of the radio audience right here in the studio, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or get the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.